Come on in, everyone. On upstairs, Brother Davis, make sure we're recording the class. Got it? Good. All right. We're in lesson four this morning. If we have some that need outlines, we got a bunch of them here. How about raising your hand if you need an outline? Would you hand them out for me? If anybody needs a handout, outline, raise your hand. All right, if you need an outline, raise your hand this morning. I'm sure no one was affected by the extra hour of sleep that we got last night, right? I know that this is where it cost us a little bit to lose an hour of sleep, but we'll have some more time in the afternoon with the daylight savings time. Hope you'll bear with me a little bit on my voice. My voice is 1,000% better than it was all week. I actually completely lost my voice on Monday, and it didn't come back. I finally went to the doctor on Thursday. Looked like I had kind of an allergic reaction, and at least that's how it's been treated. And I'm glad to be able to speak. I couldn't even speak to people this week. We've been studying themes in the life of David. And this morning we want to continue in the lesson we started last week called The Failures of David, but also dealing with the power of God's mercy. We went ahead and started out with what we would consider, maybe some people wouldn't consider, a failure of David, but that is his anger and his willingness to go and kill Nabal and the men of the household. And how Abigail, because of her godliness, her humility, she kept David from executing these men. And we pointed out that while David did not actually commit the act of murder, an act of vengeance, it still was a failure. But a failure that was headed off because of this godly woman. And that's how far we covered last week. We pointed out anger. We pointed out the heart, the importance of controlling our thoughts, and the power that one godly woman could have in keeping this man from committing the terrible things that he had thought about doing out of his anger. Now, this morning, we're going to be talking about probably the first thing that would come to your mind when we talk about the failures of David, and that is the sin concerning Bathsheba. And I want to tell you, as you begin to analyze this, you start scratching your head a lot. Honestly, I asked this question with David. How could this happen? How could David have committed the sin that he did with Bathsheba? As you begin to look at his background and what he had and who this was, it really is perplexing. Let's read if we could, and I'm going to have to ask some of you to do a little reading to spare me some of the voice. How about Bryce, if you would? Read 2 Samuel 11, 3 through 5. You can either read it off the chart or your Bible. Doesn't matter. 2 Samuel 11, 3. Tell you about, if you would, and I should have included this in the outline, read verse 1 and 2 as well. Okay, let's analyze this if we could. Why did this happen? You know, David, he's the king. He has been blessed by God. Now, what is David's wife's name? We don't have enough time to list them, do we? But even saying that, I mean, he had numerous wives. As you begin to look at this, I want to suggest something to you. And excuse me, it looks like I didn't complete some of my editing here, so you just have to, I have rushed this out this morning. One of the things that I believe is true is that this was not a spur-of-the-moment thing. I believe David had likely been taking some steps that left him weakened. I do know this, that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you know, it just snapped into my mind and I acted on it and it was a spur of the moment sin. That can happen. This was not such a thing. What David did here was not something that came just because of an immediate lust, an immediate act upon that lust. Notice how sin is described, whether it is short term or long term. James 1, 14 and 15. It says, but each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. There's a process from the temptation to the action that takes place. Now think about this. What steps did David have to take in order to commit the sin with Bathsheba? If you just look at the first five verses that we read, what steps did David have to take in order to end up in committing this sin? Yes. Yes. Now think about that. He's involving other people. I mean, you know, we might not think about that, but here, there are other people being involved with this. Were there some things that you may could suggest were factors even before he saw Bathsheba from verses 1 and 2? We didn't put that on the screen. But in verse 1 and 2, are there some things that suggest something is wrong already? What's that? Yeah, armies are out there. David is the commander-in-chief. He's not old at this point. He should be out there with the army. He's back in Jerusalem. Maybe he's got some time on his hands. I don't know why he's there. He shouldn't be there. His mighty men, Uriah and others, are out there fighting the battle. Joab is leading, but what's going on here? So again, we don't have all the answers. By the way, do we still have some extra outlines? Are they all given out? Okay. The army is out there and David is at home. We don't know why. But that's a problem. Now, as you begin to analyze this, you continue to go, we ask this question, did David know Bathsheba's husband? She, you know, Bathsheba's identified. Now, who is this person? This is Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. So David inquires before he sends for the woman. Does the name Uriah ring a bell with David? Absolutely. Uriah is one of David's friends. He's one of the mighty men described in 2 Samuel 23:39, one of the 37 mighty men. These are the very greatest of warriors that imitated David and loved David. Now, you would think that David would go out here and hear that this is Bathsheba, Uriah's wife, and that would have shut it down right there. What's going on with David? What's he thinking about? What warnings does God give us about adultery? You know, as you start talking about the sin of adultery, the Bible does talk a lot about it. And I'd like someone, let's have one of our younger men, if you would, Brother Smith, Nathan, if you would you read the chart for us? You know, you start looking at this, the Bible is pointing out that adultery is a sin of immense consequence. Immense consequence. Tell me about it from this verse. What's the difference between somebody who steals to eat and somebody who takes another man's wife? People look at that a little differently. Now, it's true. It is sin, and sin separates from God. But this particular sin has greater consequences, not necessarily before God, but where? Where did the consequences come, according to this verse? That's right. It involves the earthly consequences, the train wreck that it creates. And David's going to find out this the rest of his life. This sin is going to create problems for him the rest of his life. And, you know, again, what is David thinking? Did David not know about this? Yes. I want to show you this morning. Remember, David is a man after God's own heart. He's one of the greatest men of the Bible. But he was a man. And he went down a path here that very few men of God would go down. And it's still, to me, surprising, shocking. But, you know, sin is that way. Once you think you've got it made, once you start thinking it doesn't apply to me, once you start beginning to think in terms of, you know, I don't need to worry about that. Look, I'm a prophet. I've written Psalms. I'm the King of Israel. God has praised me. You're in trouble. What should have happened to David? Deuteronomy 22:22. If a man is found lying with a woman married to a husband, then both of them shall die. And the man that lay with the woman, so you shall put away the evil from Israel. Why was David not executed? What's that? Yes. Yeah, they lacked witnesses. Although you could say the pregnancy could have been a potential evidence of that, but still, you know, there's probably, you know, one possibility is they lacked witnesses. But think about this. Before this happened, David didn't know that this one act of adultery would create a child. What is David's action doing to Uriah? Think about it. What if someone took your wife or your husband? What if there was that act committed? Does the person who's doing this with your mate think a lot of you? Now again, I believe David did love Uriah. The craziness of sin, the seriousness of sin, at that moment, he treated Uriah as if he was a piece of garbage. You know, again, sometimes, you know, I know in the sin, what does Satan get you to think about when you're tempted to sin? What do you think about? Let's take Satan's point of view here in tempting. What does the man think about in this kind of temptation? Yeah. I want to have this. I want to experience this. I want to have, you know, just this passion relieved, and I want to have the excitement of that act. A point in time act. Now, if anybody's brain was working, would you like to have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes of pleasure for 30 years of suffering? Would you like to have a few minutes where you just feel great and then have everyone that is the most important to you in this world the rest of the life to have this affect that? But that's the problem with sin, isn't it? Sin doesn't want you to involve your mind in your thinking. Sin wants you to act upon the impulse. So again, I know that as I look at this, I struggle with this. David's a great man. He's a man of God. But buddy, he goes down a path here that if you want to see the closest thing to a hell on earth, you're going to see that for David from this point on in his life. He's going to have peace with God. But there's not going to be much peace in his family. And you're going to see a lot of suffering and crying and consequences. Okay, David now finds out that Bathsheba is with child. Now, we've got some time to pass here. Okay, that moment of pleasure is gone. That excitement, now there's a fear. What's David fearing? What would David be fearing here? He's now, Bathsheba's with child. You're going to get caught. Yeah. But now David's had some time to think now. We talked about that moment of temptation. Now that's gone. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? How Satan, you know, have you ever observed how in nature animals are trapped? How they're caught in a snare? You know, it's interesting. You look at the spider's web. The fly's only got to touch one part of that web. And then he tries to struggle, and what happens? He gets caught more, you know, and gets entangled in it. And Satan is that way. He wants to kind of get you started. And again, I look at this with David. I mean, this is not a point action moment of sin for David now. Now he begins to think this way. In verse 6, he says, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And so in verse 8, he brings Uriah from the battlefield unto your house and wash your feet. And so Uriah departed from the king's house, and a gift of food for the king followed him. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, did not go down to his house. Here's Uriah. David's wanting to cover this thing up. Hey, if Uriah's with his wife, I'm covered up. I've got a way out. I've got an excuse. Why didn't Uriah go down to his house? That's right. He's an honorable man. David asked him this question. And Uriah says, "The ark in Israel and Judah are dwelling in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go to my house and eat and drink and to lie with my wife? As you live, as your soul lives, I will not do this thing." Whose words are these that we're hearing here? They're Uriah's, but guess who else's words that would have been in an earlier day? That would have been David. I suggested earlier one of the reasons why the mighty men were mighty men. I think the influence of David was there. Okay, so David now, he's had some time. This is a rebuke. Uriah, not even knowing it, is rebuking David. And so David comes to his senses, right? No. Like that fly getting caught in that web, struggling even more. It gets worse. So the next step was that David decided to get him drunk. Now, is drunkenness a sin in the Old Testament? Listen to all this silence. Yes, how would you know that? Why is, if you was just to summarize it, Old and New Testament, why is drunkenness a sin? If you was to look at the essence of it, why it is a sin? Yeah, it's the way you're built to control yourself. Excuse me. You lose that ability. And so here, David is wanting to get his friend drunk. And so hoping that he would go down to his house, but guess what happened? He got drunk, but he stayed in control. Uriah didn't go. Okay, well, that didn't work. Okay, he's figured it out now. Look, Uriah's a great man. He's walking by faith. He is really dedicated, as I once was. I'm going to repent now. David repents, right? No, he doesn't. Notice the next step. And this, to me, of all the steps that he took, was the most ungodly. The sin with Bathsheba was ungodly. Trying to cover it up was ungodly. Having Uriah drunken was ungodly. But this is pretty incredible. In 2 Samuel 11:14, it says, "In the morning it happened that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah." Now just think about this. A message is being sent to Joab. And who's taking it? What's Uriah carrying to Joab? His death sentence. Faithful Uriah. Uriah who loves David. Uriah who loves God. He's not going to go look at the letter. You know why? David wasn't worried about him looking at the letter. Why? This is Uriah, a man of integrity, a man who's of faithfulness. In verse 15, he wrote in the letter saying, "Set Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle and retreat from him that he may be struck down and die." Now, who's David involving now? We're now getting some other people involved in this matter. Who's now being involved in the cover-up? Joab. Does Joab do what David says? Okay. Now, David, buddy boy, you're setting yourself up. I mean, you're worthy of death. David is worthy of death. But what now? You're going to see some of the later troubles that David has. Now, you know, Joab, I don't know up to this point, Joab probably had great respect for David. And would have at least said David is a sincere and good man. But now his influence is going to be severely hurt. And you watch this later. This is going to come back to bite him. Who else does David get involved in the cover-up? Even though they didn't know they were being involved in it. What's that? Everybody that retreats, but then who else is left? The enemies. Who ends up killing Uriah? Technically, the enemies of God. God is going to call David to the carpet for this. Now, David was successful as a cover-up, wasn't he? Here, Uriah the Hittite died. David was successful in his cover-up. No, we're talking about it right now, aren't we? Guess who else gets to talk about it? Later Israel. Later David's sons and daughters. And we'll be talking about Absalom as we go down the line. So as we look at the failures of David, this was a tremendous failure of David. And so David's conscience bothers him. And in a few weeks this is confronted and it all comes out, right? Takes nearly a year, approximately. Now, where would you be at spiritually? If you had done things you ought not to have done, you had had attitudes you shouldn't have had, you had committed sins you shouldn't have committed, you've been playing this game in the background and you covered it up for a year, where would you be at spiritually? You know, David later is going to describe his situation in Psalms 51. David was in torment inside. And he was captured in this terrible situation where he was tearing his conscience asunder. And he did not have the strength to get himself out of it. We're talking about a spiritually mature man of God. It can happen. Now let's go further if we could. Fortunately, God knew David. And he's going to help David. And how he helps David is he sends him a man not to go right into his face and say, "You've sinned and I know it." But the approach that Nathan takes acts is a little different. Nathan knows David has sinned. David knows that David has sinned. But Nathan doesn't come right up just at the very beginning and say, "You've sinned." Notice how he does it. He gives a parable to David. In 2 Samuel 12:1, "Then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and said to him, 'There were two men in one city, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb which he had brought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and with his children, and it ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in his own bosom, and it was like a daughter to him.'" Now, stop here for a moment. I went to the vet a few weeks ago, and interesting, the questions I was asked about my cat. And one of the questions was asked, "Do you consider your pet like one of the family?" And I kind of laughed about that. But I understand, you know, how some people with their pets is kind of like one of the family. Now, I took the old tough position. My cat's a cat. It's a cat, you know. But then guess what? I get sick this week. You know who else gets sick this week? My cat. Took the cat down there and, you know, spent more money than I wanted to spend. But, you know, the cat's still sick. I'm still not 100% either. So I was kind of joking about that. Kind of interesting week. But you think about people and their pets, you know, it's kind of like one of the family. But you just, could you imagine, you know, you maybe got your pet dog that you got at home and you let the dog sleep in the bed with you and you do different things. You know, you got your animal. And then somebody next door comes and takes the animal and kills it and eats it and serves it to the guest. Well, wow. Notice. "And a traveler came to the rich man who refused to take from his own flock and from his own herd to repair one for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. So David's anger was greatly aroused against the man, and he said to Nathan, 'As the Lord lives, this man who has done this shall surely die.'" What's Nathan doing here? What's Nathan doing in this presentation, in this parable? Yeah. Isn't it interesting? We can get in a position in our thinking where we do not want to admit something. We do not want to see something. And sometimes it takes a parable like this for us to be pointing out the sin of another person. Righteous judge, look at that person. And now, Nathan responds. In verse 7, "Then Nathan said to David, 'You are the man.'" You know, one of the things as we work with people is we need wisdom. I know as I work with people, sometimes I think I can see the fear in people. They're afraid to admit the truth. And sin is that way. You know, David was probably, I mean, why would David be thinking if this came out, what would happen? What is David missing in the cover-up? What has been true of David and will be true of David in the future after his repentance that he's missing that causes him to cover and hide and cover and hide? Justice. What's another thing that he needs to consider? Let's think about it. I mean, if you get justice, you get your due, so David's going to die. If you get true justice. Well, David may not want to die, but what else are we considering here? I mean, you're right, what is just? But what else is David what's forgotten? Why ever confess your sin? Ever, Christian. Why ever confess it? Why ever admit it? We're just going to get punished. Is that right? What is David missing in this year of covering. Yeah, God. Well, now, what does God say about sin? Tell me. When God was revealing his nature about sin, when he was given the Ten Commandments for the second time, he first talks about his justice, but what else does God say regarding sin about his nature? What does God want to do with sin if he's allowed to by the people that have sinned? He wants to forgive. And he wants to extend mercy. What's mercy? Give me a definition of mercy. We talk about it. Mercy. That's right. Getting what you need. It's very similar to grace. Grace and mercy. God wants us to know that, look, you can be honest because I am merciful. David had not been honest. David had forgotten the mercy of God. You know, you think about Paul. How did Paul describe his past life as sin? He not only said he was a sinner, but how did Paul describe himself? As the chiefest of sinners, didn't he? And here David, one of the greatest men of the Old Testament. Is he a chief of sinners? Yeah, I think so too. In this respect, in what he did here. Notice how the analyzation is given by God through Nathan. He says, I anointed you king over Israel and delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you to your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. If that had been too little, I would have given you much more. God is saying, I've given to you. If you would just have trusted me in this, I would have given you more. You see, David, for whatever reason, had blocked God out of his thinking. That's why I suggest to you, this wasn't just an overnight thing. Something had happened here. Now, the consequences. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now, did David take up a sword and kill Uriah? Not literally, but he was responsible for it. Here is this kind of thinking, oh, I won't do it. The other people do it. You know how it is with sin. You cover something up. The deception, the self-deception. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house because you've despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. What's the greatest sin in this? In the verses we have on the chart right now, what is the greatest sin that David committed? Of all the phrases, that's exactly right. He despised God. So remember that. One of the best ways to keep yourself from walking down this path is to be aware of your relationship with God. In verse 11 it says, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house. I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and you shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun. How many people are going to be affected by David's sin? If we was to make a list, let's make our list. Okay, David's sin. Let's start naming the names of people that have been affected. And we won't have enough fingers, class. It's just in the remainder part we have of the class. Let's start naming them. The unborn child would die. Bathsheba. By the way, does Bathsheba have parents and family? Yeah, I mean, you think that's... You look in the rebellion of Absalom later. You're going to find some connections here of people that went with Absalom. Get David out of here. You know, it's quite interesting, you know, talking about the family connections. Who else? Joab. I would talk about Absalom. We could talk about some others that we're going to read about later. Other children of David. The list could just be enormous. And so, again, I want to tell you, though, in this, we're going to see the example of God's mercy. Is that the second bell there? In all this, I don't want to leave this all dark. I want you to know that David is going to be an example of God's forgiveness and God's mercy. I want you to study Psalms 51. It's in the outline for next week. And we're going to talk about the forgiveness of David and lessons that we can learn. Thank you for your attention.